Hello and welcome. This is the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
I'm Craig.
And this is Tank.
I just thought I'd go with a different intonation this week, so it's harder for Ben to mimic me.
Aren't you going to say your thing?
Oh, me? My thing?
Yeah.
Okay, yep. Let's break from tradition. I thought Tank was always first, so I was just kind of...
He doesn't have anything
to
say.
I don't have a story this time.
Oh, no story from Tank? That's unusual. All right.
No story.
I don't really have a story either, other than to say that I need to come into this podcast in an attitude of repentance and asking for forgiveness from the listeners, because I did say last week that I would definitely make a point of checking out the TV series Sherlock, and I did try and do that during the week, but I didn't quite get enough time to actually get through as much as I would have liked. So I'm watching episode one at the moment, haven't quite finished it. I had to pause it a couple of times because when I was watching it was really late at night and I was just not quite able to fit it all in. So
Wait, you're watching it right now during our recording?
No.
Oh, okay.
We're on different sides of the world. It's morning here. I'm in the future.
Oh, true. Yeah, that's true.
So,
that future.
Happy Back to the Future week, by the way. Yeah. And so, yeah, I will aim to watch the rest of it today. It's Sunday morning, so I'll go to church, come home, and then after lunch, I'll try and fit it in then. But yeah, my other story was my favorite movies, the Back to the Future movies, maybe minus the third one, because it was a little bit of a letdown. And yeah, it was Back to the Future week, which was cool. I was pretty excited about the fact that Michael J. Fox got sent an actual pair of self-lacing Nikes to raise money for, Parkinson's Foundation that he runs.
Yeah, that was pretty legit.
That was cool.
Yeah, there was some cool stuff that happened.
Sherlock is coming back with a 90-minute special on January 1st, so you got to get caught up before then, Craig.
Okay, cool. I'll try and do that. I mean, I can comment on what I've seen so far. I do. My reservation was to do with Benedict Cumberbatch, mainly because I know some people who are really, really into him as like a heartthrob type character, and so I was like, really... Like, I was sort of typecasting him in my mind a bit, I think, as in, like, he's going to be this sort of weak, just quirky, unusual Sherlock who kind of... Or this really debonair, like, you know, I am Sherlock, kind of, I'm the coolest thing on the planet. And he's not either of those. He's quirky, but I really like how they've done his character. Characterization is really clever. And I also like... It kind of mimics the... No, not mimics. It kind of has some similarities with the movie that Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law were in. Like, you know how they had the... Have you guys seen those movies?
Yes.
Yeah.
I might have seen one.
Yeah. They had, like, in action sequences or sequences where they were solving a crime or something, there would be, like, bullet time or like, time remapped footage, basically, where it speeds up or then generally ended up in, like, a really slow-mo. And while the slow-mo was happening, a voiceover would explain... what was happening. So if it was a fight, it would explain that it was a knock to the upper jaw, which dislocated the jaw, distracting the opponent while another hit came from the other side of the face or whatever. So it was kind of Sherlock talking through what was happening in that slow-mo sequence. I like how they've kind of done a similar thing in the TV series, but it's to do with the actual clues to solve the crime where, you know, it's not done with a voiceover. It's done with sort of slow montages of things around the scene and then overlay or superimposed text. Kind of gives you an idea and it doesn't, he just doesn't know it straight away. He kind of thinks through options and comes
yeah,
to
it
the
takes
right
you through
conclusion.
His brain processing.
Yeah, that's right. So it kind of gives you an insight into how he thinks through and gets to the conclusion that he does. So yeah, I think so far it is looking really good.
In the third season, they sort of take that to the next level. I won't tell you more than that, but okay. It gets really interesting about like mental processing type stuff.
Cool.
So
yeah,
you've got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, nice.
All right, let's move into Tech You Should Know this week. Speaking of movies, two updates. The Steve Jobs movie, I thought this was really, really weird. Opened with the highest per theater earnings this year for any movie. Of all the kinds of genres and topics, the Steve Jobs movie is the highest earning this year.
Unexpected?
Above Jurassic World?
Highest earning per theater.
What does that mean?
So there is a qualification there.
What's per theater?
I think it means made the most money. That movie made the most money by each theater, not like total. Does that make sense?
No.
No, it doesn't make sense.
I feel like the theaters together is what makes total.
Yeah, I know. That is interesting, isn't it? I know Jurassic World was like the number one selling ever, I'm pretty sure. Wasn't it? Didn't it get to the top?
Yeah. Hang on. Maybe, do they only count first ticket sale? Oh, no, they couldn't do that. As in, like...
Oh, wait. Highest opening weekend per theater average, PTA, of any movie this year. So it's just opening weekend.
Okay.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
Jurassic World was great, too. Also, The Force Awakens. Have you guys bought your tickets yet? I did.
Nope.
Good.
Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, has the highest pre-sale records, I think, of any movie ever.
I'm a bit scared about it, to be honest.
That's not surprising to me. It's literally the most hyped movie of all time, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I don't know what could possibly be more hyped than a new Star Wars movie by J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm excited for it. I want to watch it. And I think it will be good. It just does. There's just a level of concern. Everyone keeps saying, but the trailers look amazing. And I'm like, yeah, but the trailers for Episode 1 probably looked good back then. Do you know what I mean? Like, people probably thought, oh, the new ships are looking cool and whatever. Like, you can make... When you're showing little snippets and not whole scenes or whole sequences and stuff, you can make things look good to the general public. It's whether or not the story holds up and the characters hold up within that story and stuff, I think. So it's hard to know that until the actual thing fully comes out and everyone's able to watch it properly.
We're actually rewatching all of them from the beginning, from episode 4 through 6 and then 1 through 3 before the episode 7 comes out right now.
Yeah.
That's fun. I am one of the rare people that really enjoyed episode 1.
Yeah, I liked it too, actually. I didn't think it was like as bad as they say it is.
We were pretty young, though, as well, so that might have had some impact. I think
that's
for me
true.
It did. I thought the sword fights were a lot of fun. And
I'll tell you if it holds up in a few weeks.
Tell you, if episode 1 holds up?
Yeah, so far it has held up. I was actually, when I rewatched episode 4 a couple days ago, I was surprised at how little occurred in that movie, because I think my mind had sort of mashed 4 through 6 together, and I hadn't seen them in a while, and so I was surprised at kind of the little amount of ground that was covered in the saga in just in episode 4 alone. I mean, it's great. It's just, I'm surprised. So,
yeah. It's understandable, but I always think it's funny to, or I always thought it was funny how the lightsaber fights in the first episode or the first few episodes are so slow and it's,
yeah.
And then you look at the new ones and they're flying all over the screen like a Dragon Ball Z fight.
Yeah.
It's like, you guys have gotten a lot worse in the years that have gone. But makes sense, though.
They're a lot older, though, aren't they? Like, Obi-Wan in episode 4 is much older than episode 1, 2, whatever it is. Yeah. So maybe that's it. Maybe it's just that arthritis is kicking in and stuff. I don't know how that works with the Force, but... He's got a bad back or something. Who knows?
So last week we talked about the Chrome Notification Center going away. This week they're removing the always on OK Google feature for Chrome for desktop, which I use a lot, actually.
I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, if you turn it on, you can just say OK Google from anywhere on the web in Chrome, and it'll boot up a search, audio search.
Huh. Oh, I reckon I've seen that. Like advertised and stuff, but I've never used it.
Not anymore. At least on desktop. Some Apple news this week. Apple Music, first official numbers released. 6.5 million paying subscribers. Just to put that in a little bit of frame of reference, Spotify has 20 million, but also Spotify is considerably older. So those numbers seem pretty good as far as I know. I just started my 3-month trial on Apple Music. Waited a little bit to check it out. The Apple TV also is getting, or has gotten, the CBS and NBC apps. Those shows and networks are coming to Apple TV. And Apple released a new version of iOS, OS 10, and Watch OS with a buttload of new emojis. Like a taco. I'm not kidding. There's a taco emoji.
Useful.
I,
Yeah, I don't know what you would use that for. I guess if you were really hungry for Mexican food.
Which I was last night, and I went to go to my favorite restaurant, and it wasn't open yet, and I was very sad.
There you go. Super useful taco emoji for you.
Yeah, I could have done that with a sad face, and it would have been very appropriate.
Slack has a taco emoji.
Yes, I see that.
That's another reason to get on Slack.
Pizza as well.
So if you haven't had a good enough reason yet, that being talking to us and other Tech Reformation listeners, maybe the taco emoji will push you over the edge this week.
The conversation in there has gotten even more than last week, I feel like. It's just been good.
It's good to see our friends from the Rugged Marriage starting to join in as well.
Yes, yes, very much so.
It's exciting.
Also this week, Giphy launched a super simple GIF creator online. Now you can make your own looping videos.
Hasn't that been a thing for a while?
Well, yeah, but not from Giphy, which is really important. Okay. Don't you know, Craig?
Sorry. Yeah, no, it's amazing technology. No idea that they could do that.
Well, actually, Instagram did the same thing. They just launched a new mobile app called Boomerang, where you can loop 1 second videos and put them on Instagram, which I would call almost identical to a GIF, but GIF if you prefer the.
No, GIF is right.
No, the creator said it was GIF. It's a soft G.
Doesn't mean he's right.
That's true.
Yeah, he's a programmer, not a linguist.
Yeah.
That's what I heard somebody say. I don't care what the creator calls it.
People were so upset when he came out and said that it was GIF.
Is it apologia or apologia?
Oh, man. Depends on who you ask.
Apologia.
Apologia.
Which one out of Jeff Durbin and James White is closer to being a linguist?
James White.
There you go. Now, I gotta say, I really like Jeff Durbin. Nothing against Jeff Durbin at all. I just thought it was funny. But yeah, cool.
The New York Times has sent out Google Cardboard virtual reality sets to 1.3 million subscribers. They're going to be starting to use VR in their content distribution, which is awesome and crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that in episode one. Check that out if you're a new listener.
Did you guys see, Ben saw it. There was another podcast called After the Sermon, recorded our podcast about VR and AR and MR.
Yeah, Jeremy Lundmark gave us a really soaring reco. It was awesome.
Yeah, so maybe if you haven't ever listened to his podcast, I listened to that particular episode. I plan on listening to a few more, sort of similar to what he said about us, I guess. He's only had time to listen to one or two of ours, I think. But yeah, I actually thought he did a really good episode about reading scripture in context and exegesis, not eisegesis, and the difference between the two and how to go about exegesis properly and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, yep.
That was good.
So there have also been a lot of big tech acquisitions lately, and another one happened this week. Western Digital is buying SanDisk for $19 billion.
Wow, that's a clever partnership. But
yeah, it is, absolutely.
That's also a lot of money.
Very large money.
Speaking of money, you can now pay for a YouTube subscription, YouTube Red, $10 a month to get rid of ads on YouTube.
Oh, that is so tempting.
This has been a long time coming. I don't know why it took so long, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm.
Hang on. I'm sure there's a difference, but just thinking about it really quickly, can someone explain to me the difference between what Crystal was doing with charging advertisers and then allowing ads through to this, which is charging advertisers and then charging people to not let ads through?
Yes, I can explain the difference.
Actually, I think I see it already. But yeah, okay, go ahead.
Huge difference. YouTube is still making money. If we paid someone like Crystal or Peace or the other one, Purify, I think it is, to get rid of ads on YouTube, we'd pay them, and YouTube wouldn't get any of the revenue that they would have gotten from ads. If you pay YouTube for the subscription service, they still get that revenue, and they don't miss out on the ads, on the ad revenue altogether.
Yeah, cool.
And you still get no ads.
Have you heard any complaints about this? I haven't looked into it, but I think some people have been upset. Maybe the gaming YouTube section. Have you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I thought maybe I saw a headline that said YouTube gamers up in arms over the new subscription service, but didn't click it.
I think if you put a I want to say, if you're a YouTuber and you allow ads on your video, you get a small portion of the ad revenue, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that's how the YouTubers make the most money. Mm. So that may be part of it. I don't know how the subscription service works to pay YouTubers.
That's a good point.
So we should look into that. Maybe talk about it later. From Facebook this week, they have updated their mobile apps so that they don't absolutely destroy your phone battery when you run them.
Yay.
It came out this week that there was a background audio bug, which caused when your Facebook app was open on your mobile phone, your phone battery to just disintegrate, basically. So they've published a fix. So if you have not updated your Facebook app this week, go do that, and hopefully your phone battery will last a little bit longer.
I have a question about Facebook mobile apps. Can you guys see, as developers, I guess, and I know you're not iOS developers necessarily, but do you see a good reason for both the Facebook app and the Messenger app to be around 95 meg? It just seems like a lot for something that's not it's not a game that has to have huge amounts of graphical, sprites and stuff built into it to piece together a scene or something. Like, it's just an interface and some code to make it work. Should it be 95 meg?
I have no idea. Tank?
No idea.
We haven't done mobile apps.
I can see not. I can understand where you're coming from, because, they don't have a lot of pictures. They don't have a lot of video. What are they storing? So.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I'm sure the code that runs it is not minimal. I'm sure it's pretty complicated. But 95 meg just seems to be a huge... And if it was just for the main Facebook app, I could understand that, but... every 2 weeks they update their apps and you get these, hey, we've updated the app again. And often, a lot of the time when they come through, I'm not on Wi-Fi, so I delay it until I'm back home or something. But it's just a big chunk of space for something that seems like a fairly simple, straightforward interface. But anyway.
It was really controversial when they split Messenger out into its own app back in the day.
I still don't really enjoy it, to be honest.
I don't either.
What I think is counterintuitive about it is that they've kept the Messenger icon in the Facebook app.
Yeah, that drives me nuts.
So you see the notification there, you click the notification, you get booted out of your Facebook app and into the Messenger app. And if you then want to go back to Facebook browsing, you got to hit home screen and go back into Facebook. It's just
not with iOS 9.
They've added. Yeah, okay. You can hit the back to Facebook button, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but still. It's just easier to hit a tab down the bottom of the screen.
Yep, I agree. Well, and also controversial from Facebook this week, they've announced that Universal Search will now find all public posts. So if you post something to your wall, anyone can search in Facebook and see it if it's public. So you better make your posts private if you care about that. And finally this week, J.K. Rowling is at it again. She's announced the 8th Harry Potter quote-unquote novel. It's actually a 2-part play that's releasing in London next year, and it is called Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. It takes place 19 years after the novels, and it's about his youngest son, Albus Severus. I know that's not tech news, but I love Harry Potter, so I had to mention it.
Yeah, see, I'm not a massive Harry Potter fan, so I don't know. I'm glad you're enjoying it, though, Ben. That's good.
Me too.
I hope it lives up to what you want. One or two.
Yeah, I hope so, too. And that wraps up Tech You Should Know this week.
Which brings us into Tech You Should Use. So this week, I'm going to be talking about an app called Ibotta. Ibotta is a really easy-to-use rebate program in an app form. So basically how it works is you say... It has a bunch of different categories. The most common one for my wife and I is called groceries. So how it works is you... Open up the app, open up the grocery section, and it has a bunch of different stores like Walmart, Neighborhood Market, Reese's, and so on, Sprouts. I can't think of any grocery stores. My lovely wife does most of the grocery shopping for me, and I highly appreciate that. And when you go to it, you say, okay, I'm going to buy milk, and you look to see if milk is an item that gets a rebate And if it is, you can click it to unlock the rebate. And you have to take a survey or watch a video. It's not too time consuming. And then whenever you go to your store and you buy milk, you scan in the receipt, and that will automatically give you cash back. So it's kind of like a cashback program with a Discover card or like a credit card that gives you a percent back, whatever. But it's really easy money. All you have to do is check. Either you can check what you can buy beforehand, or you can just buy things and look afterwards and see, was any of the stuff I bought on discount? And if so, then you just unlock them, scan in your receipt, you get money. And then you can get that money mailed to you. You can get it in Amazon credit, so you don't have to wait for it. There's all sorts of different ways that that you can get the money back. So we like it. Free money. You can use it in department stores, entertainment, restaurants. There's all sorts of places. We just mainly focus on groceries because that's what we're always buying. So what about you all? Do you have any rebate programs that you use to get easy money for your grocery shopping?
Not really. I actually found Ibotta when it first came out and was unimpressed. But I saw you didn't like it. Well, when you mentioned you were going to cover it this week, they've changed a lot since I saw it a couple years ago. So,
Gotcha.
It might be worth another look. Kind of like the to-do apps.
Oh yeah, how's that going? Yeah. Did you pick one?
Wunderlist.
Yes.
Let's not talk about it.
Told you so. I hate to say I told you so, but yeah, good.
Nice.
No, I haven't had any experience with a tank, but I'm happy to take your recommendation because I don't think it's probably valid in Australia. I'm assuming it's an American store thing.
Oh, I have no idea, honestly.
I'll check.
You could check. Yeah. And yeah, it's not a ton of money, but it's kind of like Bing Rewards where it's just so easy that no reason not to, and you get some funny money, as someone described it recently. I had never heard that phrase, but when he said it, I like that. It's just money you can do whatever you want with. So,
unexpected income.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a wrap on Tech You Should Use.
Alright, that brings us into Theology from the Headlines. This week, we're going to talk about happiness, and specifically, the relationship of technology to happiness. So, there's a Nautilus article that is incredibly long that we all read this week and wanted to talk about. So, I'm just going to read part of it. Over the past decade or so, a growing number of researchers have begun to rethink exactly what happiness is and distinguish between two types, hedonic happiness, that positive mental high, and eudaimonic happiness. Aristotle was referring to the second kind, eudaimonic, when he wrote 2,300 years ago, quote, "Happiness is the meaning and the purpose of life, the whole aim and end of human existence. This is the kind of happiness that qualifies a life well lived, time on this planet well spent. Medical technology may soon be able to engineer a momentary absence of fear or the presence of a moment-to-moment sense of well-being, but engineering the second kind of happiness would be far more difficult." So there's a couple of things to talk about there. First, I'd love to tackle the Aristotle quote, "Happiness is the end of life," huh, guys?
I think that's pretty much the point that John Piper makes in his book, Desiring God. He just qualifies it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's a wrap on Theology from the Headlines. Go read Desiring God.
Yeah.
Yeah. That book, whenever I was a fairly new believer, that was a very powerful book in my life.
Same here.
Whenever I read it. I just picked it up. I just went to Mardell, a Christian bookstore here. I don't know if it's nationwide or international wide, but anyway, Mardell Christian bookstore, and just was looking through books, picked up Desiring God, didn't know it was amazing until I read it and blew my mind.
Nice. I was familiar with Piper from his podcast, Ask Pastor John, and I was looking on his site one day wanting to look at books he's written so I could read one. And, you know, he's written like over 50 books. So I had no idea
what to read, but I finally found Desiring God on the website, and I was like, huh, Desiring God, that's what his ministry's named. This must be what he's all about. So I'm going to read this book, and I just ordered it on Amazon and read it, and it was amazing. Changed my life.
I actually found him through, yeah, I love it too. I actually found him through a group Bible study resource called When I Don't Desire God, which is kind of like a follow-up answer for people who would then go up to him after his preaching or whatever and say, yeah, but what happens if I find myself in a season where I just can't get that joy that you're talking about? Like, I can't, you know, it doesn't seem to be there and I can't. Yeah, anyway. So I found it through that and same sort of experience, sort of started reading it and was like, well, this is... It does fundamentally shift a bunch of things that you would normally think, I think, when you start... As a new believer, when you start reading the Bible, you kind of don't fully understand how it all pieces together. But he's really good at giving a big picture overview how finding our true happiness in God and having Him as our highest treasure is what is not only best for us, but also brings most glory to Him.
Yeah, I think Aristotle probably meant apart from and absent of God. So slightly different.
It still makes sense that I think Piper makes this argument as well. I could be wrong, but I really do agree that every act we do is one we think will bring us the greater happiness. If we're doing something, I mean, even non-believers, if we're whatever, people are acting in a way that they think is going to bring the most happiness, even if we're wrong. And
right.
So we just have to realize that Christ brings the most happiness, and then we'll pursue Him all the more.
Agreed. I think Piper would say he got that from Jonathan Edwards, who said something like, we are always making a decision in every moment about what will make us the most happy, what choice will make us the most happy in that moment. And that's how sort of free will works, is what he would say, is free will is choosing what we desire to do most in any given point in time.
Mm-hmm. I think also maybe there's a... And I don't know, this might be something that comes out of another quote that you're going to mention, Ben, but I think it relates to this as well. When I was reading this article, one of the key things that I kept coming back to was, I feel like, and I know the terms are used interchangeably, but I feel like maybe when we look at the Bible and the desiring God, Christian hedonism, sort of way of thinking and all that kind of thing, I kind of feel like there's a difference between joy and happiness, if that makes sense. And I think joy is what we need. Happiness is what we want. And it's not a bad thing to have happiness, but happiness is something that can come and go and will come and go.
Happiness is fleeting. Joy is lasting.
Yeah, that's right.
I would agree with the distinction.
Happiness is fickle and is based more on circumstances and things like that. Whereas joy is something that can last forever. You know, Piper comes back often to the phrase sorrowful but always rejoicing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, that to me says that, you know, in all of life, there will be those ups and downs, and that will mean, in a world of sickness and decay and sin, that will mean at times being sorrowful for the world around us, and people who are struggling and things that don't seem to be going the way that we hope in our hearts that they would. But at the core of that, we can still rejoice because, well, we're commanded to rejoice always, but also because our real hope is in God, and that's not a source that changes. It's a source that's constant.
Yeah, I think to go back to what Tank was saying, if we really believe joy is lasting, then the only one who can produce joy in us is Christ. The only one we can find joy in, ultimately, is Christ. And, I mean, we can get and do get happiness from all kinds of things, but we can't get joy from anyone but Him.
So would you all say that someone who doesn't believe in and follow Christ can truly experience joy? Can they only experience happiness?
Great question.
I think they can experience a joy, but it's not a lasting joy. I think, you know, you can have people who experience happiness so often that it kind of turns into a level of joy, but I think underlying that is still a foundation that can be rocked, more easily than someone whose joy is found in God. And so I probably wouldn't say it's impossible to find any joy as a non-believer, but I would say that the joy you find is on shaky ground, I guess. It's not.
Yeah. I think it depends on how you define joy, for sure. But I kind of think I don't have a problem saying that, Tank, believe it or not. And maybe it's just to be a little controversial and try to get some better conversation going. But, you know, I mean, if we really think about it, I think that the kind of joy that Christ produces in us, that following him leads to, is so disproportionately greater, so much greater than anything else that we could ever even call joy, that it's like it's almost no contest, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's putting levels of differentiation between joy. It's not saying that one is joy and one's not joy at all.
That's true. You're correct, sir.
No. I'm just trying to figure it out.
Yeah. No. That's a really great point. I don't know. I think it's kind of like a little bit. Maybe it's like faith. We would say that someone whose faith doesn't persevere to the end didn't have saving faith. Mm-hmm. In the same way, someone whose joy doesn't persevere to the end doesn't have true joy. Maybe it's what I was kind of trying to get at.
Yeah.
I can see where you're going, and I agree with that, but I also really like Craig's answer as well. It made me think of two things that are said in the Bible, I guess. One, that the man who builds his house on the solid rock, which we would count as Christ, is solid, and that'll last no matter when the storms come. And so you can rejoice even though you're sorrowful, because your house is going to stay built because you're on a rock, even though the storm's hitting. But the man who builds it on the sand is foolish, and when the storm comes, it's just going to destroy it. And we know that our rock is solid because we have the promise that Christ will never leave us or forsake us. And so people who build their house on money, like stock market crash and bam, all gone. Or people who build it on their spouse or their girlfriend or whatever, something terrible could happen, or the person could leave them, children can leave, all those, anything that's created can be given and taken away. And so we have to learn to build our foundation of joy on the rock who promises he'll never leave us or forsake us, and he'll never change. He's unchanging.
Wait. So the rock isn't Peter?
Different verse.
Just kidding.
There's more than one rock in the Bible, Ben.
Yeah. There's the cornerstone, I guess, would be the difference.
Yeah. Good call.
So we haven't talked about tech yet. How does this article get into tech?
Yeah, so in the article, they talk about, the quote I read mentions that technology, they're working on sending in nanobots to our system that could basically flip some chemical switches and give us a momentary sense of happiness. So they've identified a gene, HTTLPR gene, which these nanobots can increase in your system. And so then they were talking about, there's a lot of researchers being quoted here, and it's really interesting if you have time to read it. They were talking about the difference between the two types of happiness, which we brought up earlier. And so this gene increase can add to hedonic happiness, but not eudaimonic happiness, which brings us back to the Aristotle quote. And so then they got into a really good conversation about what happiness is and what it requires. And actually, this is one of the things I wanted to bring up. I'll just read this quote. Close relationships and social connections keep you happy and healthy. That is the bottom line. People who were more concerned with achievement or less concerned with connection were less happy. Basically, humans are wired for personal connections. And that's a quote from Robert Waldinger, the psychiatrist at Harvard Medical School, who conducted one of these studies. So he says humans are wired for personal connections, and that's a crucial part of happiness. Obviously, that's something technology can't do, give us more personal connections. So that's kind of why they brought it up in context of this article. Any thoughts on us being wired for connections?
Yeah, we are. I think, you know, we're made in God's image. God is three in one. The Trinity is a perfect relationship of love and submission and all the complexity that goes with that, obviously. In some ways, obviously, that is very different from how we operate as humans because we aren't God. But, yeah, I think we do have built into us a desire for and a need for relationships with other people. And I think that can certainly be something that contributes to a real joy, is that fellowship with other believers and a sense of love or a real love in our lives for other people. So, yeah, I would agree with that.
I think that point is a very important one for us, especially coming from someone who's probably secular, because they've realized something that we know is true from the Bible, that this world created by a triune God, us being created by a God who is complex in his unity, who is eternally communal, making us in his image, causes us to be, quote, wired for personal connection, such that we're not living to the full extent if we don't have those personal connections. We won't be happy if we don't have those personal connections.
Yeah, and I think can I just add something into this as well? It reminds me of last week we had a bit of a discussion about The Weight of Glory by C.S. Lewis. And so I actually brought up a quote last week, which I ended up editing out. But I think this week it does kind of play into this, and particularly with the idea of what sort of bots were they? What do they call them?
Nanobots
that will go in, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but the article was talking about kind of dulling down our anxieties and our concerns about the world and kind of giving us a level of, like, increasing a level of the hormone or the chemical in our brain that kind of gives us a calm feeling. Is that, that's kind of part of the
goal?
Yeah,
it says, medical technology may soon be able to engineer a momentary absence of fear or the presence of a moment-to-moment sense of well-being.
Yeah, okay, so it reminded me of the quote from The Weight of Glory that says, it would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong but too weak. We're half-hearted creatures fooling around with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us, like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased. So I think that is so normal of human thinking to go, let's work out, okay, what makes people unhappy? Anxiety, worry, concern, stress. All right, so let's just find a way of temporarily eliminating those things from someone's day. And then if they just do that temporary elimination enough times, then they'll either sort of get used to feeling that way or they'll be supplied with something that enables them to feel that way more consistently. So that might actually work chemically. That might have an ability to make everyone walk around in the state of calm. But it's not going to be the joy that we were created for. It's not going to be the vibrancy of life that God has made possible for us, I suppose. And so, yeah, like I think for people in general to settle for that, to go, okay, well, we can just have these nanobots that will sort of sort out our emotional lives and just let us live our lives in a way that feels like we're more at ease with the world. That is settling for something that is not what was originally intended by our creator.
Yeah, so having established sort of the two kinds of happiness in the article, and then establishing that the more lasting kind of happiness involves inherently personal connections, then the researchers begin to talk about technology in this article. And there are two perspectives. Obviously, one says technology enhances this, and the other says it doesn't. So let's move into that sort of discussion. Nicholas Christakis, a Yale sociologist, says, "Technology drives us up into our cortex away from our heart. What makes the world go round is not technology. It's not having a better and better iPhone. I've got a fancy new phone and I just hate it. The technology is just going to distract us back into our heads so that my daughter feels it's cooler to text someone than it is to talk to them on the telephone. That doesn't bode well for happiness in 2050. So he thinks that technology is driving us apart.
Is there a counter argument in the article?
There is. Shall I read that?
I'd be interested to hear both sides. We can see if they're both right or if one's right or they're both wrong.
Yeah. So the other side, presenting the other side, is a guy named Robert E. Kraut, a researcher at Carnegie Mellon University. So his more recent research has found that today, most people spend their time online communicating with people with whom they already have strong ties. In those cases, he argues, the findings are unequivocal. That just means it's clear. And that this is the case. Online connection decreases depression, reduces loneliness, and increases levels of perceived social support. It does this by enhancing offline relationships. Online interactions, like offline ones, are more fulfilling if they are with people with whom we have strong ties. They mean a lot less if they're with strangers. And so Kraut says, as long as we're connecting even more in different ways, both face-to-face and then online through maybe Facebook or email or text, it actually enhances our relationships with the ones we're the most close to.
I would say, in my experience, that even without a face-to-face contact, technology, relationships over online can be very encouraging, I guess, or can be fulfilling in one sense, can feel fulfilling. And I say that from experience because my freshman year of college, I would sit alone in a dark room all day, my first semester particularly. And I could go a whole week without saying anything more than thank you for someone opening the door for me. It's a very, very dark time, partially because, like I said, the lights were always turned off, but on the inside as well, it's very, not a very fun period of my life. And I played this game, this online MMO game, where a lot of it, you were just sitting on a square talking to each other. Like that was, it was the perfect game for me because I was terrified of human interaction. But online, I was this powerful character who was one of the strongest in the game because I'd been playing for a long time. And so people looked up to me and it was super easy to talk to them. And I would say that there was a sense that that was what I did most of the night. And that was in some form, I think that increased my happiness, not my joy. I was still miserable and I would lay in bed and just wonder, like, is this how it's going to be for the rest of my life? But to some degree, those relationships I felt like were real. I really cared for those people and I really enjoyed my time with them. And I think those were beneficial. I'd also like to take a moment just to say thank you so much, Jesus, for completely changing who I am and showing me how much better he is and letting me find my identity in him rather than everybody else around me who I was terrified of. But he's changed me a lot since however long ago that was, now 7 years ago. And once I got saved, I could actually talk to people all thanks to him. But that was a period of my life that was hard, and I would say technology helped me through it. So,
I think you've keyed into maybe the final researcher perspective. And so Keith Hampton from Rutgers University says he doesn't think it's people moving online, that interconnected relationships with the internet are not distracting us from people. He thinks it's people adding the digital mode of communication to already existing relationships. So he says, of course, Facebook and technology are not sufficient in their own right to fend off loneliness, like you just mentioned, but in conjunction with other modes of interaction, they can bolster existing relationships, contribute to diverse relationships, and keep dormant relationships alive. The overall effect of technology, he says, is to overcome the constraints of time and location that would have proven insurmountable before. So the article concludes with something kind of we've already mentioned, but I think it's important, knowing that we worship a triune God. Happiness is and always has been about our relationships with other people. And so we will only experience life and happiness to the full extent that we're connected with others, just like our eternal God who's in community with himself. Mm-hmm. Father, Son, and Spirit, that is.
I think this podcast is an example of how helpful relationships can exist through the internet. Like none of us have actually, I think you guys have met Tank and Ben, but Derek and Ben and me have never met, and so we are getting together each week and talking about things that matter, talking about the Bible, and learning from each other and growing and that kind of thing, and that's all done, made possible through technology. You know, we're using Skype to record this. We're using the internet to get some information and articles and stuff to sort of kick off our discussion, and then we're talking about Jesus for an hour. It's a pretty good use of technology in terms of meaningful relationships, as far as I'm concerned.
And as Tank mentioned, none of us would be here if it weren't for Jesus. He's right. The thing we have in common. So I guess that wraps up Theology from the Headlines. So let's move into recos. Craig, you got any recos this week?
Yeah, I've got a reco this week. Yesterday I was playing at an annual state pastors conference. I was playing in the worship team, and as part of that we did a song called All Creatures, which is essentially a retake on an old hymn.
Yes, it's a great one.
And we did a version by King's Kaleidoscope.
Yes.
From there's like a YouTube clip, which is a film clip of them playing it in a studio together. I think it might be slightly different to the version that's on the recording that you can buy on iTunes, but we did that song. We did their version of it. I haven't heard a lot of King's Kaleidoscope before, but I have heard people saying that they're good. So this was my first sort of encounter with them, and really enjoyed that song. So definitely check out King's Kaleidoscope, and specifically their YouTube clip for All Creatures.
Nice. Tank, you got any recos?
Yeah, for me, I picked up this week and skimmed through a book called Praying the Bible, and I have been putting...
Don Whitney?
Yep, Don Whitney.
Awesome. I've heard that's one of the best books on prayer there is these days.
Oh, man. I skimmed through it, like the whole thing, in about 10 minutes.
Wow.
Really just picked up some important parts, and I've been doing it, and it's been awesome. I wish I had started praying the Bible years ago, because I have been loving the Psalms, which always was... I've never really loved the Psalms. I thought they were great, but I never really just loved them like I hear people do. And now at work, I'll take 15-minute break and just go through one of the Psalms praying it, and it's been awesome. So I definitely recommend checking out that book.
Nice. And I will reco an app for Mac called Dr. Cleaner. It's like one of the top apps on the App Store for free. And it tells me some interesting stats about memory usage, disk space, duplicate data, all that kind of stuff. Makes me feel really good about my machine. I don't know if it actually accomplishes anything. My Mac is a couple years old now, and it feels like it makes it run faster, but I'm not sure. So check that out if you have an old laptop and you're trying to speed it up. And if you would like to connect with us, you can jump on our Slack channel. So go to slack.techreformation.com, fill out that form, it'll send you an email, and you will just go through the steps to sign up and jump in. It's all totally free, and you can join in the great conversation we've been having on technology and theology, which we've just really started to scratch the surface on here.
And you can find us on Twitter @TechReformation or on our Facebook page. Or you can head to our website at techreformation.com.
And you can always email us through the email ask@techreformation.com. Feel free to send us any comments, questions, feedback, ideas, whatever. We'd love to hear from you.
And we haven't said this in a while, so if you like the music that we've been using at the beginning and the end of every show, it is by Matthew Parker. I put this in the show notes every week, but you can find him on SoundCloud and iTunes. He's got some great stuff out there. Check him out. Thanks, Matthew, for letting us use your stuff for free. Thanks for listening. This has been Tech Reformation. We'll see you next week.
lastly, you can always email us at ask at techreformation.com. I think the double "at" was throwing me off.
I think we found the after the credits part.